Good morning, everybody. We are going to be wrapping up a really long sermon series this week because I'm going on vacation in a couple weeks. I thought, oh, okay, Emily, get it together. Wrap this up. It's been 10 weeks. I think it's been helpful, I hope. There are parts that I think we could certainly flesh out further. There are just lots of other things I could have added to that, but I think we can do that through some like shorter, more focused series. And so what I want to do this morning is just kind of bring it all together, summarize what we've been learning over the last 10 weeks, and then tie that to Jesus' teaching in the Sermon on the Mount to show some parallels with what we've been learning here. So as you know, we've spent quite a bit of time in the early part of Genesis because that's where the root of the disagreement about human nature is found. Okay, so since the split in the Eastern and Western churches took place back in 1054, many of the Western churches have taught that humans are inherently evil, that we're born separated from God, that our default setting is profoundly immoral. However, the Eastern churches, the Eastern Orthodox churches, as well as some Western churches, kind of stuck with the earlier Christian conception about humans, and they've always taught the opposite of this. They've taught that humans are not inherently wicked, that we carry the original blessing of God's goodness, of God's creative power in us, that we're bearers of God's good image on earth, and that when God said over their creation, it is good, it is good, it is very good, that they meant it. And no amount of mistake-making on our part negates that basic goodness. And they'd say, yes, we do have tremendous capacity to do evil, but that can be resisted and overcome. So I think a lot of people hold on to the doctrine of original sin because they look around at humanity and they think, gosh, we really can be truly terrible. We can. And so maybe it's helpful to think about that being sort of the human default baseline so that we can just legislate accordingly. But I don't think original blessing negates that human capacity to be terrible. I think we can still be not inherently evil and still choose to do truly terrible things. Right? So we looked at the story of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, and we looked at St. Augustine's and St. Anselm's, I think, unhelpful interpretations of that story. We looked at how Augustine, I think, misunderstood Paul. I would even argue those were harmful interpretations. And then we tried to look at what I hope is a little more helpful of an interpretation. And that's that these metaphorical humans, Adam and Eve, they were created to tend and to bless the world. They were given a whole lot of freedom to enact that blessing. And they were given a few boundaries. And that they were a little bit like children learning their limits in the world, and the Creator was a little bit more like a parent. And so these childlike humans messed up. They did the thing they weren't supposed to do, right? They ate from that tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And so God allowed the consequences of that to play out, even while continuing to bless them and to bless their children with life. No matter how much the humans messed up, God continued to say, I will bless you, and you can still choose to be a blessing. All right, so then after the Garden of Eden story, in the early part of Genesis, we see a succession of stories where the underlying question is, okay, can these humans remember who they are and embrace their role to bless and tend the world? Or are they going to continue to make choices that bring death and destruction? And we talked a couple of times about Adam and Eve's son, Cain, and how he murdered his brother. And we know that before he murdered his brother, God warned him. He said, sin lurks at your door. You must master it. You must overcome it. It's not who you are. It is going to keep you from living the life that you're meant to live, right? But Cain doesn't overcome that. He doesn't overcome his jealousy. He gives into it. And so we're told that no, he can't live up to his parents' mantle to bless the world. And so he chose to bring death. And within his context, he would have deserved death. But even though he deserved death, God literally still marked his forehead with life, right? He blessed him with life. No one was allowed to kill Cain in retribution because God was not giving up on humanity, right? And then those stories go forward. So after we see the story of Cain and Abel, the next one that comes along is Noah's Ark, right? And it says in that story that humans just kept choosing corruption over and over again, and overwhelming violence had spread all over the world. But God preserved humanity and preserved some animals on an ark, right? A literal lifeboat, when the choices that we were making were destroying us. And then after that, we've got another story. It's a story of the Tower of Babel, right? Where humans chose to build this giant tower to the heavens and explore what it might feel like to be imperial gods, the kind who could wreak death and destruction in this widespread, well-organized, oppressive way that empires can. And the Creator said no and dispersed them. And those humans were, again, not living up to their divine purpose. So God dispersed them in hopes that doing so would quell their worst impulses. Right? God was still hoping for them. And so what we see in these early stories, which were all poetry, right? These are stories that are trying to illustrate to us the kinds of sins that most tempt humans to reject their role of blessing and tending. Right? We are made to bless and to tend, and so it's answering the question, what most often trips us up? Well, judging others, right? Eating from that tree of the knowledge of good and evil, making humans feel like they're equipped to make judgments over people's hearts when that's God's job. Judging others is a big one. Jealousy. I mean, murder, obviously, is going to hurt our connections with others. Widespread corruption, which is probably greed and selfishness, violence, flirting with imperial aspirations, right? These are the kinds of sins that lurk at humanity's door that we have to overcome, lest they overcome us, right? So those stories are talking to us about us. And these stories are gifts from humans thousands of years ago who are warning us about our worst impulses, right? It's like, beware, this is what will get you. And so then after the Tower of Babel, the story shifts and comes back down to one man again, Abram, later called Abraham. Right, in Genesis 12, and God starts out by reiterating blessing. Genesis 12, 2-3, the verses are on the back of your bulletin if it's helpful to you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you. I will curse those. Whoever curses you, I will curse, and all the peoples on earth will be blessed through you. Right? Blessings and curses. I'm like, how many times can these like couple of verses say bless any more than they do? And then we see, through the story of Abram and his descendants, Genesis starts to teach humanity how to embrace this call to bless, right? How to be wise, how to recognize what is ours to bless and curse and what is not ours to bless and to curse, how to discern between the ways of God and the ways of folly. And these humans made mistakes along the way, sometimes really enormous mistakes, sometimes disturbing and offensive mistakes. But the stories are growing humanity up, right? These childlike humans in the Garden of Eden are starting to mature in wisdom. And so they're learning over generations how to trust God and also how to earn God's trust so that they can grow in their ability to bless. And then Genesis culminates with Joseph ruling over Egypt, dispersing life-saving food to his brothers who mistreated him. And then it goes upon to the story of Moses, which is way too big for us to even summarize here. After Moses, there's a series of laws that are given in the Torah. And those are all about working out the best ways that humans can love their neighbors as themselves and live in good relationships with others and with the creation, right? This is like humans needed some guidelines. And at the end of these laws, the leader of the Hebrew people, Moses, says this to them. This is right at the end of the, well, not right at the end of the Torah, but close to the end, Deuteronomy 30. This day I call the heavens and the earth as witnesses against you. I have set before you life and death, blessings and curses. Now choose life so that you and your children may live and that you may love the Lord your God. Listen to their voice, hold fast to them, for the Lord is your life. Right? This is the constant question of Scripture. Right? Are you going to choose death or are you going to choose life? Are you going to eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, or are you going to eat from the tree of life? Are you going to choose jealousy and violence and greed and control and selfish desires, or are you going to choose trust and sacrificial love? Are you going to live into the fullness of your calling to live out your identity as empowered heirs of the Creator God, or are you going to squander that inheritance and that calling and say, it's your choice. Choose life and blessings, not curses and death, for your own sake. And so with that basic story in mind, reading Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, it makes a lot of sense. Right, the Sermon on the Mount was one of Jesus' most important teachings. It's found at the beginnings of Matthew and Luke. It's in its most full form in Matthew chapters 5-7. I think Luke's is sometimes called the Sermon on the Hill. It kind of gives it a little smaller. There's a mount, and then they'll call it the hill. But what's he open with? Blessing. Matthew 5, 3-10. Blessed are the poor in spirit. There's this the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Oh, I think I put in my note there. Righteousness and justice are the same word in Hebrew and Greek. They will be filled. Blessed are the merciful. They'll be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart. They will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers. They will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Right? So Jesus is opening up here, making sure everyone knows that they are marked by God for blessing in life. Right? The people who might be tempted to think that they are excluded from God's mandate to humanity are assured and reassured that they are not. And then after blessing, Jesus spends a significant amount of time talking about the sins that lurk outside our doors. Right? And there's kind of this laundry list. What sin does he start out talking about? Murder and contempt that leads to murder, right? It's just like the Cain story coming right after the Garden of Eden. And then Jesus goes on. He talks about treating people with whom we have sexual relationships with integrity. And I think that can vary by culture and by time, but the basic premise of treating others with care and integrity stands. Right? We know Abram in the Genesis stories certainly struggled in this area. We watched him do it. We can learn from that. He lied and he said his wife was his sister to her great detriment. He exiled one of the mothers of his children, Hagar, into the desert. Right? So integrity with our most intimate partners is something that we should tend to. And Jesus reiterates that. He cares about that. He addresses lying and violence. And then he goes on. He says, you've heard it that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you might be children of your Creator in heaven. They cause the sun to rise on the evil and the good and send rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that? If you greet only your own people, what are you doing more than others? Do not even the pagans do that? So be perfect, therefore, as your Creator is perfect. And I think this call to be perfect can sound a little bit odd unless you're operating under this idea of original blessing, which tells us that we can live righteous lives. Right? Perfect, maybe not exactly perfect, right? Nobody is perfect. But this call to live a righteous life is attainable. It's something we can grow into. Right? We talked a couple of weeks ago about having a growth mindset as opposed to a fixed mindset in regards to sin, right? That we can mature in integrity and in wisdom. And Jesus urges us to do that, right? Jesus, the Bible told us that he himself, he grew in wisdom and in stature, right? He became a human and he experienced this himself. And so following these warnings about the temptations that keep us from embracing our true nature, Jesus offers us a few tools for growth. Right? He says, practice generosity, like lavish generosity, but not in a way that brings you accolades. He urges us to live lives that are steeped in prayer and finding peace and communion with God. He warns us that a love of money can trip us up. He reminds us that while material goods are nice, they're not what happiness is made of. Right? Light and light are found in love and in relationships. He encourages us not to worry. He says, trust God to take care of our basic needs. Release your anxieties to the Creator. And then he says, don't judge others. Trust God. Love your neighbors as yourselves, right? We did an entire sermon on that. Don't judge. Trust God. Love your neighbors as yourselves. And then Jesus echoes what Moses said to the people. He says, enter through the narrow gate. Wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. Small is the gate and narrow the road that leads to life, and only a few find it. Right, do you hear that? It's like what Moses said, I have set before you life and death, blessings and curses, choose life. It's the same message that we have coming from Jesus here. Right, so if we can choose to do good, why did Jesus become a human? And I think we touched on a few of the answers over the last few weeks. I'm just going to briefly summarize a few to kind of wrap us up here. I mean, obviously, I could preach like a whole sermon series on each of these, so we won't do that. But we talked pretty much in depth at how the classic Eastern Orthodox and Anglican answer to that question is, Jesus came to defeat death. Right? The classic Christian teaching holds that fear of death is the biggest obstacle to humans living out our original blessing. That we fear death, and so we do all kinds of things to alleviate that fear. And it's the source of most of what trips us up. And so Jesus came to reveal that death ain't no thing. It's part of the journey, but by no means is it the end, and that we don't have to fear it. He also came to reveal that the powers and the principalities of this world are foolish. Right? His death and his resurrection teaches us that the power of God is different than the powers of the world, and that what humans often see as strength is different than what God sees as strength. Those are two different things. The powers and principalities of this world might hold that a large nuclear arsenal is strength, but Christianity holds that vulnerability and a willingness to lay down our lives for our friends is real strength. So Jesus came to upend our conceptions of power. He came to show us how to live a faithful life. He came to unveil the mechanisms of scapegoating and our propensity to do that to others to alleviate our anxieties. Ken and I wrote half a book on that. Certainly have a lot more to say on it. I think we did another 10-part sermon series back in the day on that, right? Jesus came to invite us into a new creation. He became a human to empathize as closely as possible with the condition of humanity. And he came to show us that God has been faithful to humankind over and over and over again, blessing us when we don't deserve it, teaching us through stories, sending prophets through the ages when we get off track, and then finally sending a part of himself, the Logos, the Son of God, to help show us. And then sending another part of himself, the breath, the animating spirit of creation, to live in us and to help us grow in wisdom and discernment. And we're told all of this is driven by love, which is the essence of this creator God. It's just unabashed, unquenchable, unrelenting love to help us live the fullest lives that we can. And so may we have both the courage and the creativity to be a generation that can live into that calling to be a blessing, and then to pass that torch to the next generation as an expression and an expansion of God's good realm on earth, right? Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Amen. All right, I didn't have any like good stories, but I'm like, let's just sum up. This is the gospel, right? And I think we usually do a little silence or guided meditation, but what I did was I actually kind of wrote a bit of a prayer or maybe poem summarizing it, and I thought, if you would like, I invite you to just like close your eyes and just sort of receive this as I read it over us. People make noise, and that's fine, but let's, Spirit, be here. You are inherently good. There is nothing about you that could ever keep you from God's love. You are worthy of love and belonging. You were created to bless and attend the world around you. You'll make mistakes, but no matter what, God will continue blessing you and forgiving you and marking you with life and drawing you toward light and love. Beware the sins lurking at your door that keep you from your true nature. They're like a vampire waiting outside of your home, ready to drain your life force. Resist those temptations. Don't judge others, that's God's job. Be aware of jealousy and violence and selfishness in your own heart. Trust the Creator. They desire good things for you. Love your neighbor as yourself. Seek wisdom, capital W. Live generous and prayerful lives. Don't think too much of yourself, but also don't think too little of yourself and your vocation to bless the world. Choose the narrow gate that few find. Choose life and choose blessings over death and curses again and again and again. Embrace the Spirit of God in you and release its awesome creative and courageous power into the world to green the world and to bring justice and peace. Return to your roots. Tend the garden in this sacred temple called Earth, because you are a priest of the Earth Temple of the Creator God. And do this with others for encouragement, for growth. You're not alone. Enjoy pleasure and beauty and all that life has to offer. And when it's over, know that death is overcome, that this is not the end, so you can fear not. Go and live abundant lives. Amen.